live from the In the Room studios located in the Net Carrier and Cloud. This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Welcome to WCW Retro, I think, episode 4 at this point. I am the host, Dan Colachico. They call me the above-average comedian. I think I'm hilarious. Follow me on Twitter at DanLoy83. With me, as always, former WCW and current independent superstar, I say, Stro, the maestro of wrestling. Stro, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great.
Everything okay down there weather-wise?
Yeah. It was just, been back and forth with the storms this way, so...
Mm-hmm. I saw the picture of the storm coming in, so I was like, uh-oh, it's a Thursday. It's a retro must be on because there's a storm coming. But tonight, we touched about the early 90s, and we're still going to talk a little bit of the 90s in general. I'm going to touch upon Sting and a couple of the other workers and have this a generally positive episode. I think last week I took it in a negative direction, and the company's gone, so there's no need to just dwell on the negative and Jim Herd and that moron and the other things. I just, any chance I get a chance to call Jim Herd a moron, I think I feel better. But tonight we're going to mostly talk about whether you like him or hate him, whether you think he's a crappy worker or not. One of the biggest stars in the wrestling business signed with WCW in 94, and that is Hulk Hogan. And all I remember is that news breaking, you know, being covered on Saturday Night and all the other shows. And even as a kid at that point who was the biggest Sting fan, the biggest WCW flag waver, even at that age, knowing that was happening, I was very excited. 11, 12 years old. Hulk Hogan's coming? Put yourself back in that moment in time, Stro, and what was the feeling around the business around that time?
You know, it was a big change in the guard at the time. Matter of fact, even Ric Flair himself was helping set up the big debut of Hulk Hogan to World Championship Wrestling. You know, through Eric Bischoff, and things were kind of paving the way for his big return, you know, especially with the fact that they were unifying the titles at the time, the International Heavyweight Championship, which was actually the original, you know, the big gold belt that we see on SmackDown now. And actually WCW World Championship, you know, where their mirror just won to where, you know, Ric Flair got the big victory over Sting to unify the titles to kind of bring in the big challenge of Hulk Hogan debuting the World Championship Wrestling to take on Ric Flair for the title.
Yeah, I think, and I think most people would agree with me, looking back on that, I think there was nobody that was more perfect. As much as I like Sting and Vader and the other guys who were in the company in those days, I don't think there was anybody that was a better worker that you could have put in that match than Ric Flair. Ric Flair set that up perfectly, and you just, it was an easy person to put in there, get the fans to hate him, put Hogan against him, and it's just money right there, in my opinion. And my memories of that match, of course, I have the match on, I say VHS, but I long ago, in around 07, when I had plenty of time on my hands in 07, I copied all of my WCW VHS to the DVD, but I've seen that match, and I have never. That's one of the loudest. That Bash at the Beach '94. It's one of the loudest I've ever heard. a building.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, this was like, this was the feud that should have happened years ago, you know, when both these guys were like, were on top. And this was a feud that everybody was expecting to go down big time when Ric Flair went to the WWE originally, when he was, you know, went bringing the championship belt with him, if you recall, with Bobby Heenan. And everybody was expecting, you know, the big, big showdown between two of the top guys, you know, in the 80s, you know, Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan, you know, champion versus champion. And, it, you know, it never commenced. So, you know, everybody was like really excited to see, you know, two of the biggest icons of the 80s go at it, except this time in WCW.
And I think, and I don't, you know, I pretty much think that that's one of my favorite matches, really. I mean, you know, I can't compare it to, Steamboat and Savage, or, you know, Bret Hart matches or Shawn Michaels matches. But one of my favorite matches was Flair and Hogan at that Bash at the Beach, which was technically the first quote-unquote Bash at the Beach. It was Beach Blast prior to that. But that first Bash at the Beach match, that the only other one-on-one match with them in that initial run was later on at Halloween Havoc, was it not?
Yeah, pretty much. And it was just, you know, everybody was like, you know, they were expecting the feud that, you know, the fans should have gotten in their years prior. So, you know, so everybody's like, was really pumped to see, you know, to see the big Hulk Hogan Ric Flair feud at the time in WCW.
Yeah, some of my, and I liked the, he must have feuded with Vader for almost, the Vader matches, which was, you know, another, I think it was the very next year at the next Bash at the Beach, the cage match on the beach. Hey, what is your opinion of those, I've heard differing opinions on the whole having the matches on the beach. Well, what was, have you ever been involved on the beach wrestling? I believe you had at least once. And two, as a fan, is that a good place to see a wrestling match, or is that not a great place?
It's definitely a different atmosphere. You know, you're right there near the ocean, and, you know, and I guess they're, you know, they're trying new avenues to go, you know, with, you know, along with, you know, bringing Hogan into the company. And so I guess that's, you know, what they're trying to, they're trying something different.
You know, and I think the only thing that would have bothered me about seeing a match on the beach being the shorter guy is there's no bowl. So if you're not up close, trying to see is probably a little harder than usual. In the arena, you just sit there and look forward. But I think the initial Hulk Hogan thing, I mean, first of all, it boosted the ratings. More money was coming in. And the initial Hulk Hogan run that first year, I think, was great for the company. You had an easy, as I stated earlier, you had an easy face. You could work him against any heel. You can work him with any face against any tag team. I mean, you had the Mega Powers reunite against Flair and Vader with several matches. That involved the Renegade, too. I just remembered the Renegade. Holy moly. The WCW Warrior. Yeah, wow. So you had the Renegade on that side. I think somebody... And listen, I know I'm going to have a lot of people think you like me. I think the only thing I look back on with the Hogan thing is some of the guys that had been working. It was a situation where some of the guys that were working there all those years, like Sting and even Flair, Vader, they were all kind of pushed aside to put Hogan on the forefront. And I think it needed to happen if you were going to try to have it successful. It needed to happen to have him on top.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was, and in the beginning, like you said, it was doing great. And, you know, and Hogan was bringing in a few stars, friends of his own, you know, from the old WWE era, you know, the Macho Man and so forth, and Beefcake and Hacksaw and Duggan down the road. So, I mean, Hogan was providing good business at the time.
And you know what? Let's touch upon that. Who can forget... quite frankly, the late, great Macho Man Randy Savage. I mean, that was before Hogan even came over. And that was, you have to think, that that was one of the first names that Bischoff and the rest of the guys at the company at the time looked at that and said, man, we're getting Savage. Well, actually, technically, it was after Savage. It was after Hogan. I'm sorry, I got that backwards. It's all going through memory, and I don't want to try to look it up on Wikipedia because you don't know how accurate Wikipedia is.
Right.
But he got signed, I think, late that year. I mean, real late, December. But you have to think that was one of the guys that when we got Hulk Hogan, now we're getting Savage for a boost. They got Boss Man was coming back at that point. I think it was Bubba, Big Bubba at the time. You had Avalanche involved in there. Later on, that evolved into the Dungeon of Doom. And you know what? Another thing, I hate some of the things I say. Looking back on it, because I have all the Nitros up until January 2000 on DVD now, all legally, obviously. I liked the Dungeon of Doom feud. I liked the War Games with Sting, Hogan, Luger, and Savage, and the turmoil between Savage and Luger. That was a good little bottom storyline on that major storyline. Then you mentioned all the guys that they brought over, which we will elaborate on as we talk today. But then that led into the debut of someone who has become one of the biggest names in this business, the Giant, Big Show Paul White.
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Paul White, who was known then at the time as the Giant.
Yes, the Giant. But correct me if I'm wrong, and again, I have all these on DVD, but a lot of it was best of VHSs that they were releasing in the late 90s. But they were trying to push him. They were at the beginning, they were kind of saying that he looks just like Andre. They were kind of pushing him as the son of Andre, right?
They're going to push him off as the Senate of the Eighth Wonder of the World, Andre the Giant, and and going to fourth with its feud with Hulk Hogan at the time.
Yeah, was that make him the Eight and a Half Wonder of the World? I'm not sure. I don't know how that works.
Right, mathematically, right?
Yeah, he's not really the Ninth Wonder of the World because you had eight and a half, and then the Ninth. But Randy Savage again was another one of those guys that. I loved his run in WCW, even though later on with – I can't talk tonight. It's just – it happens. We go on air. I can't talk. Later on in the late 90s when he changed his look a little bit and he had a gorgeous – well, Stephanie with him. Sorry. I don't really want to talk about it, but I think one of the underrated – it's not a great match, quote-unquote, but one of the – funnier moments, one of the funner moments is the correct wording I should use, in WCW in the late 90s when you had a lot of crap bubbling up was Savage and Dennis Rodman.
Oh, wow, yeah. And,
yeah, at the porta potty. But that's for another time. That's for late 90s discussion. Do you think, because like late 90s is like four episodes. do you think Savage was ever underutilized because of Hulk Hogan, or do you think he was happy in that role?
Those two, you never know. It's like one day they were best of friends, and the next day, they couldn't stand each other. They had this like love-hate relationship going on, and they were the first ones to admit it.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how true it was toward the end of Randy's life, unfortunately, that they were burying the hatchet. I don't know how much of that is really true. But you like to think that when the end is near that you grow up enough to where it's like, I don't care, One of the things also in the early 90s that they tried to – we touched upon this the last episode was that – I think there was in the early 90s alone, there was two or three iterations of the Four Horsemen. The first one, I believe, obviously, the way it played out was just for storyline purposes, and that was with the addition of, Ric Flair, Ultimate Bad Guy, his arch rival, Sting. You never think that they would become bedfellows, and Sting joined the Four Horsemen. And I do remember not vividly, but I have memories of just saying, "No, Sting, what are you doing?"
Right. Oh yeah, yeah, and you know that I think you know Sting, if not mistaken, Sting tried twice to kind of be friends with the Horsemen. And in the end, you know, of course, it backfired. You know, because I mean, let's just face it, Sting is not Horseman material. You know what I mean? You know, Sting is a league of his own. You know, and he's always had that rivalry with the Ric Flair and the Four Horsemen. So it's always a natural rivalry between Sting and Flair.
Yeah, but you know what? It's always a good one. It was always well received, and it always had the reaction that you wanted. The Stinger and his trust quotient that had to have run out by 94, you would think. I don't like this guy anymore. And that was one of my favorite ones. It's one of those calls, you know, we mentioned Bobby Heenan, but it was one of those calls I will never forget with Heenan, always questioning why those two were together. And then as soon as Flair kicked Sting in the gut in that tag team match at Halloween Havoc, it was, "See, I knew it was going to happen like that. It was a plan all along." One of my favorites.
Right. And, you know, and this was kind of like, if you think about the irony of everything, you know, this was kind of like a prelude to Sting when he, you know, later on, where not only the Horsemen turned on him, but he felt like, you know, everybody in WCW turned on him. So, you know, the prelude to him going underground, if you will, and coming back as this new Sting, who looked like you know, the Crow. You know what I mean? The Crow Sting.
Okay. I think, and you know, as a wrestler, you always have to, every now and then, you have to update the look and change it a little bit. I think that just happened to happen at the right time. You needed to. People, you know, these days they always make fun of it. Crow was stupid. I was like, you know what? I can't remember a time watching that part of the show that I was not glued to the TV seeing what was going to happen next, the early days of the NWO and the Sting that wouldn't talk. I look back later and I question, you know, obviously I'm not an expert on this. I don't work there. But I question the, why did he not work more? Why did he stop for so long? And why did he become completely mute? But at the time, as a kid, it worked with me, and that was the whole point. That's what they were going for.
You know, being in those arenas and him come out and not say a word, just stand there, it got more reaction than he ever did. I mean, it was just incredible, the reaction he would get when he would just make an appearance. You know what I mean? It was crazy.
And one of my favorite bad guys, Vader, I'm going to put it out there, Big Van Vader, again, somebody we kind of just touched upon last time, but I don't think we gave him enough due. Vader, you mentioned it perfectly, he is one of the top big men in the sport, period. Whenever you had your favorite good guy down on the mat, and that dude was going to do a moonsault, how you weren't watching it with your eyes just wide open, your mouth with the jaw just dropped to the floor. That never got old for me.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, and the matches he had with Boss Man at the time were really good.
Yeah. Yeah. He had also, obviously, I throw Cactus Jack in a bunch of categories, but, again, something we touched upon. One of my favorite feuds was with Vader and Cactus Jack. I mean, here's a guy, we don't even need to talk about what Mick Foley became and how popular and amazing he is and how nobody knew it at the time, obviously by proof of being fired and quitting and all the things that was going on with him in backstage. But the man was perfect against Vader because he could take a beating and they would put on great fights where you would swear it was legit. I mean, it's on the DVD, but that Saturday night match, I believe it was a Saturday night match. Yeah, I'm going to go on record and say I think it's a Saturday night match where Cactus Jack just got beat up, like punched in the face by Vader, and I think he broke his nose and he needed several stitches for a bunch of cuts on his face. I mean, he just got beat up.
Those two would have some classics. And, you know, I mean, I know even Foley admitted himself that some of the toughest matches he fought at the time were with Vader.
Yeah. Anybody. And, you know, the feud that Sting had with Vader, it was just the ultimate. You want Sting to win so badly, and you don't want Vader, that evil, evil man, to get an upper hand on him. And again, you had the 90s where you started having these major pay-per-view productions. I missed the days, especially as a kid, my memories of it is, you know, that Sunday's coming up and begging your mom or your dad to please spend $30 on this pay-per-view. It was harder with dad because I just stayed in the age wrestling. But it was easier with mom. But please, Sunday nights used to be a whole all-day thing. And that is just the only reason that changed is because he grew up. WCW was my hate back in the early 90s. Can you think of, back onto the Hulk Hogan thing, we both talked about that first match of the beach match. Was there another particular match, if you can remember, that you really, really enjoyed in those early Hulk Hogan days?
Well, of course, you mentioned, you know, some of the challenges he had before, you know, Ric Flair and Vader and so forth. And, you know, I guess everybody at the time was hoping that him and Sting would hook up, go at it, which didn't really happen until later on, you know, when Sting came back as the Crow and so forth, that Crow-like image. So, you know, I think that's, they wanted to make the rivalry with Hogan and Sting, you know, special, and that really, really means something. So, I agree with, you know, I mean, yeah, two of the biggest, most popular icons ever, you know, with Hulk Hogan and Sting. It should be a big deal.
Oh, yeah. One of the things that I always wondered is, I have a memory, and again, I want to save Nitro for a separate episode. We'll touch upon it. One of the matches that I enjoyed the most, and I don't, it just brings to the thought that why didn't they just make this a pay-per-view thing? It would have worked. They were both so big at the time that it would have worked. You put Sting and Hogan for the title at one of the shows. You don't have to have a reason other than two good guys want the title and you have a match out of it. But they actually wrestled on Nitro in 95, well, obviously 95, but Sting came out in the red and yellow. Mm-hmm. And Hogan at the time, because of his feud with the Dungeon of Doom, came out with the black face paint on his head like Taskmaster, and came out with a black tights. So you kind of had evil Hogan versus Sting, but those guys had a good match on live TV.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, it's just, they really did.
And this is what I would like to do, because I don't think, I think sometimes the Dungeon of Doom is kind of frowned upon. I want to take the halfway break, play some commercials, come back, talk about the guys that were in Dungeon of Doom and our thoughts on the storyline with Hogan as we carry on through the early 90s here on VOC. We'll be right back at WCW Retro.
This is CeeLo Brown, right here, right now. You better recognize that I am down with the VOC Nation. Recognize that.
Hey guys, Brady Hicks here, Pro Wrestling Illustrated contributing writer and the host of In the Room, thebradyhicks.com, and for the first time ever, VOCNation.com. So happy to be part of the family. Join us each and every Tuesday night, 9, 8 Central, VOCNation.com, TheBradyHicks.com, myself, DJ, Derek McDonald, Ray Bogus, Anthony Sarlo, Kathy Fitz, breaking down all that's going on in wrestling today, and so much more.
Okay, Philadelphia parents, listen up. do you have a child in the house that's just about to learn how to drive? Well, you got to do this. You got to head over to DuncanSchoolOfDriving.com. Best of Bucks County 2013. Keep that insurance down. Keep them accident-free. 215-639-1990. They're endorsed by the Pennsylvania Police Officers Association, DuncanSchoolOfDriving.com.
Business owners, prepare to take charge. Get the latest trends in business and technology every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Eastern, presented by NetCarrier. Tweet your business questions in advance at NetCarrier using the hashtag TakeChargeTuesday or call live toll-free at 1-855-BOC-RADIO.
Hey, I'm the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart, telling you fans worldwide to visit VOCNation.com. VOC Nation gives you top-notch interviews, insightful blogs, and, of course, the VOC Wrestling Nation radio program. The VOC Wrestling Nation radio program is live every Wednesday with the hottest guests, the latest news, and lots of fun from the greatest team in wrestling media headed by the voice of choice. Hey, take it from me, the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. VOCNation.com is the place to go, baby.
Hola, hola, hola. I am Shelly Funtime Martinez.
And I am Dazzling Danielle.
And together we are
the Martinez Girls.
Tune in on VOC Nation at 7 p.m. Eastern every Saturday. And until then, Danielle, I and you are Audi 5000. Adios, toodles.
The godless voice of Crab Nation.
None of these assholes would have the balls to say any of this to anyone live.
I get hard as one of them stones. I'm going to hurl at a homosexual.
He's got 6 ounces of weed, and he's saving his roaches?
Bangable and diabetic.
Pop the car keys.
This is Stevie Wonder.
Free speech zone should just be the air, motherfucker.
Catch the crabs on Crab Nation Live weekdays.
Noon to 2 p.m. Pacific, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the VOC Nation.
Entertainment with an attitude.
There is just one enemy.
This is the VOC Nation Radio Network.
Welcome back to WCW Retro. We got a little Dungeon of Doom discussion to go on to. I'm Dan Colachico, the above average comedian, with me, the maestro of wrestling, Stro. And we're talking about the early 90s again to elaborate on some of the things we should have talked about last week. But more so Hulk Hogan and the impact he had on the early days of WCW when he was signed. And I think when we talk about the Dungeon of Doom, and correct me if I'm wrong, but one of the things you got to remember, I think, is you got to treat that angle as I think it was geared to, and it was for the kids. Obviously, wrestling fans will tune in, and they will get it for what it is, or they won't, but I think that was more Hulk Hogan for the kids and the evil, the Skeletor to the He-Man for the kids at the time. Well, maybe even that's too late for 95. I don't remember. I mean, Kevin Sullivan, again, another guy whether you like him or hate him, every time he came on that TV, it was just a level of hate as a child that it was unmatched.
Yeah, Kevin Sullivan was like the ultimate villain at the time, so it was just the perfect rivalry. He had the ultimate hero in Hulk Hogan and the ultimate villain in Kevin Sullivan in Dungeon of Doom. And, I mean, the cast of personalities involved with Dungeon of Doom was, you know, it was just amazing. I mean, you had Zodiac, Brutus Beefcake, Yes, No, Yes. So you had the Shark, you know, formerly Earthquake of WWE, John Tenta,
yeah.
Right? You had Ming. You know, and the Barbarian, and, you know, the Giants, who we know now is the Big Show, you know, and Hugh Morris, now, Laughing Man.
Yes, the Laughing Man. Later on, Hugh Morris was on there. Again, off of memory, was Vader part of that at first?
Maybe in briefly. I know Kamala was one time too. You recall?
Oh yeah, Kamala with Kamala with, you mentioned the Zodiac. I gotta.
Yeti.
Well, I'll bring that up in a second because that's painful. But the Zodiac, I got to be honest with you, confession time here. I never knew till years later that that was Beefcake. I had no idea. And I said that to my fiance recently. I said to her, you know, I didn't know until almost maybe 10 years after the fact that that was Beefcake. I just did not pay attention that much to him. And she looked at me and she went, really? Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you had like Loch Ness, a guy named Loch Ness, no.
Oh, yes. that was one of kayfabe, quote unquote. That was one of Regal's buddies, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember him. You get a chance to look back at these Nitros. There's so many things I've forgotten about Loch Ness.
He had Big Bubba Rogers, you know, Boss Man there with him, the Dungeon at one time, and One Man Gang.
Yeah, One Man Gang was in there.
And Jacqueline, too, if you recall, at one time.
Yes, Jacqueline. Oh, my gosh. Because Jacqueline and heck, I'm just going to mention him. Jacqueline and Kevin Sullivan started a feud, which was after the Dungeon of Doom, with Benoit and his wife.
Yeah, Jacqueline used to beat up Kevin Sullivan's opponents on the outside, pretty much, and have a match on the outside.
I mean, yeah, it was kind of China before China.
Right.
Yeah. Sullivan and Benoit beat the crap out of each other for a long time there, later on.
Very intense matches, no doubt.
I recall there's a match where they go out into the bathroom, and they actually, I don't know who was on security detail that day, because they done messed it up that night, because they come out of the bathroom, and there's at least 60, 70 people standing around trying to get at these people who are trying to put on a match. Like, I recall woman walking through the crowd with her heel and smacking people to get by them with her shoe. She, get out of my way! Bam! Falling them back down.
Hearing Dusty do commentary on these matches was just classic.
Dusty doing commentary on any match is classic. You know, and every time you mention Dusty, let me, because this is going to tie in. I'm going to mention this first. Caller, I see you're there. I'm going to pick you up, the caller, in a second before I forget this, because I will ADD out and it will go away. Whenever somebody mentions Dusty on commentary, I always mention to them, hey, did you know Dusty Rhodes did commentary for Monster Truck Races on TNN? And I get the same look every time. Why? Remember when Dusty joined the NWO in the late 90s?
Yeah.
They did a storyline on the show. It was TNN Motor Madness at the time. Ugh. And they would air, you know, the truck pulls, the super truck, the mud racing, and the monster trucks, which, quite frankly, I was a fan of. So, and I'm from Jersey, so I don't know where that came from. They wrote in a storyline where the NWO, which was really Dusty and a bunch of producers wearing NWO shirts, took over the set, and he was forced in on the three-man commentary booth for the live events at the Monster Truck Races. So it wasn't bad enough that you had him on wrestling, but to hear him talk about, you know, a 540 cubic inch Hemi motor, not knowing what that, it was beautiful. Tie into Halloween Havoc, I think it's 95. Yes, it's definitely 95. Giant versus Hulk Hogan and the Sumo Monster Truck match. And I believe it was on the roof of Cobo Hall, which was next to the arena that it was in at the time.
Right.
And if you remember, because we're gonna segue into the Yeti, or the Yeti, as Tony calls him, he got into a fight with Giant on the roof, and accidentally the Giant fell off of the roof of Cobo Hall. Now, cut to the match later on, out comes the Giant with not a scratch on him. He lived. He lived through the fall. And I'm saying anybody that big could probably survive a fall like that. But they had a match where not only did you have Jimmy Hart turning on Hogan and joining the Dungeon of Doom, you had the biggest cluster, one of the biggest ones in WCW history with this. I still don't, when I watch it, I'm still not sure what's going on. I watched it again recently. I'm like, what is happening? The Yeti comes out and he kind of just hugs Giant around the neck with Hogan between him. It didn't look like a wrestling hold. It looked like that they were just three friends hugging each other after not seeing each other for a long time. I recall, I think later on I found out the Yeti was Reese from the Flock. I think that's right. Yeah.
Big Reese.
Yeah, Big Reese. But you had guys in
try riding a plane with them. Brutal.
I'm ready for a story. Go ahead.
Oh my God! One time I rode in a plane with him one time, and you know I was a window, and he was aisle, and it was brutal. I mean, I was squished against his corner, man, and. And I was like, and he's like, you know, he's laughing. He's getting kicked out, and he's ribbing me, right? And I'm thinking, oh, man, one day, your day's coming, right? So later on, we get back, you know, we're training the power plant, right? And we're, you know, and we're having kicking drills, right? And we were paired together, and I'm thinking, oh, this is sweet. And, oh, man, every time I kicked him so much, all I kept thinking about was that. The damn play ride I had where he was squishing me the whole trip. So, I mean, I was just loving those kicking drills, man. Oh, man. Yeah. I wouldn't let him up. Oh, man, this guy is huge. I mean, TV, just like, you know, Paul White, TV does not give these guys justice how big these guys are. I mean, they're just ginormous.
I remember the first time I met Kevin, because Kevin Nash, he was a big guy, but he was always like a couple inches. Then Giant or Reese or something like that. And I met him once in Echelon, at the Echelon Mall at the Hall of Heroes in Voorhees, New Jersey. And I'm 5'5". And I looked up at him, and I kept looking up because it kept going.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we have a caller. Caller, you're on the air. Who is this?
This is Derek McDonald. I was just sitting here enjoying you guys talk.
Derek. My goodness. Derek.
How you doing? And it's funny. It's funny you brought up Dusty Rhodes, because when I was in high school, we had this thing where we would push like a girl into like the men's bathroom, and I had a buddy, and he would do what Dusty Rhodes did in that Kevin Sullivan match. He would yell out, "There's a woman in the men's bathroom." He would just yell it out. So it's funny you guys are talking about.
I can't believe it's Tony, baby. There's a woman peeking in the men's bathroom while Sullivan's getting on, daddy.
For all terrible, his fault, he was awesome on commentary. It was so bad. It was beautiful to hear him on commentary.
Yes.
Oh yes.
Okay. Hear about plunder and all that stuff. It was amazing.
Right.
There. How about your memories on the Dungeon of Doom? Because we're kind of talking about their feud with Hulk Hogan.
That was, what, 95. So I was about 9 years old. And even as a 9-year-old kid, it was terrible to me. I remember they had the Zodiac.
Yes.
They had Ming, and Ming had, like, this thing on his thumb that he would stick into your throat. And I remember they had Lex Luger at one point. It was just terrible.
The Tongan death grip.
Nothing. yes. Nothing redeemable about the Dungeon of Doom, nothing at all. And then I think towards the end it got real weird because they added Conan, and Conan didn't even fit in with these cast of characters.
Conan.
Like, guys like Conan were in there for like 3 weeks. Lex Luger was never really fully in that group. Because that was another thing. Talk about that Halloween Havoc 95 of not knowing what the hell is going on. Lex Luger comes in the ring and does this thing, cheats on Hogan. I just think they were throwing things at Hogan just to throw them at Hogan.
It was crazy. I remember like they had a leprechaun. Like they had a guy called the leprechaun in the group. And I'm just sitting there as a kid like, this is terrible.
I'm surprised Oz didn't return and join the Dungeon of Doom at that time with all those cast of characters.
They could have dressed anybody up like Oz at that point, yeah. But I remember when Giant came out at that War Games and he was hopping the ropes like he was like 100 pounds, as big as he was, and doing what he did to Hogan, I remember just literally as a kid – literally watched going, oh my God, it's going to happen again. And I will say this, like, I find out this happens most of the time, that I had fonder memories of the Dungeon of Doom feud, and then I rewatched the Dungeon of Doom feud.
it's bad. I have a very good memory, unfortunately, when it comes to, like, bad wrestling. And I remember when the Giant debuted, and he had on Andre Giant's shirt that he wore in that movie with the princess from the 80s, and he hands it to Hogan, and Hogan's like, Jimmy, this is Andre's shirt. And I'm like, what? Andre the Giant had a kid? Like, it was such fucking terrible stuff.
But, I mean, but look what came out of it. Let's quite frankly look at what came out of the Dungeon. I mean, you had veteran Kamala, which... that was a gimmick. He didn't have to do much. Kamala came out, did Kamala's thing, slapped his stomach, did a few things in the ring, and it was done. Hugh Morris, Bill DeMott, had a wonderful career and a great after career with training the young guys coming up through the business now. You had Big Boss Man as Bubba Rogers at the time. What can you say about Big Boss Man? I mean, I think sometimes he's overlooked. You know, he wasn't the most amazing, but he's overlooked sometimes. He had John Tenta. The Shark gimmick was the only thing worse than the Zodiac, him coming out as a shark. I'm sorry, with all due respect, John Tenta, I love you. You were great. And all due respect to the late, great John Tenta, that was stupid. Stupid.
And I remember him turning face and him yelling, I'm not a shark, I'm a man. Like, he just kept yelling that out.
Derek, I don't know if you heard it earlier when I mentioned it, but I legally, quote-unquote, obtained every Nitro from the first episode to January 2000. And
wow.
Yeah, it's, again, I go back and watch some of the stuff I have really fond memories of, and a lot of it's okay, but there's some of it you're just like, the hell did I watch this?
Yeah, a lot of that stuff, like, it was a time where, like, I remember WCW had, like, I remember the Big Boss Man, they obviously couldn't call him the Big Boss Man, so he was, like, the guardian angel. Like, it was a lot of things going on in that 94, 95 time, and it was just, you know, before he was the Zodiac, Brutus Beefcake was the Butcher. Like, a lot of things going on, and I was just like, what the hell? Are they putting on television?
Remember the booty man.
Yeah, the booty man.
Oh, my. His signature move was the hiney. Ha ha!
That's right.
Oh, my God.
And you know what? I don't, the thing is, I don't think he had much of a backside to begin with. So I thought it was pretty funny that was his finish. You know what I mean?
If you look at Brutus Beefcake, he's kind of just one straight line back and front and side.
Yeah, like Khali.
Well, yeah. Now, something I'm glad you called, Derek, because I know what a fan you were of WCW, but I mentioned something earlier that I wanted to ask both of you gentlemen with the chance I knew you were going to call in. Why didn't we get Sting and Hulk Hogan? Do you think it would have been a bad idea, or do you think they might as well, with all the other crap they were doing, have run with it. Do you think there would have been money in that, Derek?
Yeah, I remember watching it, and when, you know, they had the big parade for Hulk Hogan in Disney World, and he's signing the contract and the balloons are going off, and the first person I thought they were going to put him in the ring with was Sting. Now, this was me being a kid. I didn't know Flair was the bigger match at the time, but if you would have put him in there with Sting before he became the Crow guy, that would have been amazing.
Yeah, I think if you fast forward to 97, even I have to admit, and you know, Derek, I'm the biggest Sting mark, I'll use the word mark, that there is out there. But you go to that match, Starrcade 97, thanks for the agreeing with me, I appreciate that. You have to go back to 97. when you go back to 97, it was just like it fizzled before the match even started that night.
Yeah, it was such a great build-up to, like, I mean, that's probably one of the best build-ups I've ever witnessed in wrestling, with Sting just not doing anything for a year and beating guys up here and there. The build-up was great. The match was a little disappointing. I think that a lot of that had to do with Hogan. When Hogan first came in around 94, 95, Sting was still flying all over the place. He was still carrying the company on his back. He had the crazy colors. They could have made a lot of money with a Hogan Sting at Starrcade back in 95.
Do you remember the match I mentioned earlier? I don't know if you heard it, that Nitro match they had.
Yes. And, you know, Sting, I guess people see him as the guy now who wrestles in a T-shirt on TNA. But he was amazing. Like, for a guy of his size, he could move like a cat, and he could jump all over the place, and he was strong. And I've always told people, if Vince would have got his hand on Sting in the early 90s, Sting could have led that company for at least a decade. Just based on his athleticism, his look, his in-ring skills, he was everything Vince wanted the Ultimate Warrior to be, except Sting could wrestle, and he could talk.
Yeah, well, he could talk, but it was better than Warrior. I mean, he could talk to a certain point. That was definitely better than Warrior. I have another question to pose to you two gentlemen. Stro, you first, then Derek. Do you think, we don't know, so this is speculation, do you think kind of being shelved or being put on the back burner because of Hulk Hogan hurt him mentally about the business? Do you think he just stopped caring at that point?
Well, you know, at the time, Sting, you know, he was at the crossroads at the time. He had some things going on professionally and personally that he was struggling with. And with that, it kind of played into the whole deal where, you know, it is the deal where on TV where, you know, he felt like the company, everybody in the company turned his back on him, you know what I mean? And that's when he started saying, you know, from now on, nothing's for sure. And then he'd make sporadic appearances and slowly make this transformation and through the Crow Sting. The time, which was, you know, like I mentioned earlier, you know, he would make appearances, not say a word, and people would just go crazy. And it was a great build up to the match with him and Hogan for Starrcade, and which, you know, I'm in agreement to where, you know, I was expecting more at the time. It was such a great build up, but I mean, it was just the story itself was great.
I might be the wrong guy to ask this because I'm a petty guy. I mean, I'm the guy, when I played, you know, peewee football and the guy tripped me and knocked me down in the mud, you know, I got him back in high school. Like, I don't forget things like that. But, I mean, if you look at Sting, he took a backseat to Hogan, and then he had to take a backseat to Hall and Nash when they came in. He took a backseat to the Giant. It's like whenever somebody big came into the company, whenever they got a nice, shiny new toy, it kind of took Sting – and they put him on the back burner. And maybe you always hear stories about how the guy is such a great guy. You know, he's a Christian and this. So maybe it didn't bother him. Maybe he just loved the wrestling business. But to me, I know I would have been upset. And I would have been making a lot of calls to Vince. But I think the whole thing, I would have been calling Vince every night. But the Crow thing kind of saved his career. Like I said, me being a kid, he went from having the blonde flat top, and then he let his hair go down, and he stopped talking, and he's wearing black. And it's like, you know, a new wrinkle to this character. And there's not too many guys who could advance their career by not wrestling and not talking for a whole year. And he did it. And it was that was a very special time for the guy. So it turned out the best for him. He could have been bigger, but from where he was at when Hogan got there to what he became, I think it was the best for him.
I think the perfect example of that, and I'll get both your thoughts on this, one match I remember in particular at 95 Great American Bash, well, for the U.S. title, for that after that tournament, was the Sting versus Ming was a great match.
Yeah, he had a lot of great obscure matches people don't really remember. Like, I remember he had a match on Nitro with Dean Malenko that I loved, and you never hear anybody talk about it. Sting, he was one of those guys, high up guys, who would, you know, actually come down and he would wrestle Booker T when he was still in Harlem. I remember he had a couple great matches with Brian Pillman in the early 90s. He was the only top guy who would get his hands dirty with the mid-card guys.
Like you said, Sting was it was like the perfect top guy at the time. Where I mean, he can, you know, get in the ring and wrestle with anybody of any style, any size. So I mean, he, you know, very very hot at the time.
Derek, since it's your first time with both of us on the air, from the early or mid '90s, do you have any specific memories that you just want to throw out there? Any favorite moments? Anything for WCW those days?
Oh, I got a bunch. I got a lot of bad memories, too. I mean, you want to talk about the Ding Dongs or PM News, we can talk about that. But I remember loving the hot Ratna Man, that thing, too. I remember loving the Hollywood Blondes, and at first I couldn't put my finger on it, you know. But I loved the Hollywood Blondes. Steve Austin always stood out to me. Him and Brad Pillman, they were like, you could tell these guys were going to be great, and they were so different than everything else. I remember a Flair for the Old when they made fun of Arn Anderson and Ric Flair, and I remember loving that. I remember the matches they had with Steamboat and Shane Douglas. Those were great tag team matches. I didn't care so much for the main event guys except Flair in the early 90s, but I loved the mid-card with Austin and Pillman and Douglas and Steamboat and those guys.
I think Derek makes a good point. What I'd like to do next week, talk about the tag team. He touched upon the Hollywood Blondes, and I think next week that's what we ought to do, is specifically any time frame in the WCW, we're going to do our favorite tag teams and our favorite tag team matches. Stro, any last random Hulk Hogan specific or mid-early 90s specific memory that we haven't mentioned before that you want to talk about?
Wow. You know, you would have to talk about the big turn, no doubt. I mean, that really changed history to where, you know, when the Outsiders came in, they had the mystery partner to take on Randy Savage, Sting, and Lex Luger, and everybody was wondering who the mystery partner was. And then when Hogan came out supposedly making a big save and then turning on Savage and Sting, and hearing the commentary with Dusty, Heenan, and Shivani, it was just incredible. And the heat, the amount of heat that got to where, you know, one of the biggest heroes, baby faces of all time, you know, with Hulk Hogan, you know, turning to the dark side, you know, with the NWO joining Hall and Nash. I mean, it was just tremendous.
Absolutely. And we will also specifically talk about the NWO. You can't talk about WCW without talking about the NWO. We plan on doing an episode, I say we because it does, talk about the Four Horsemen specifically. You got to talk about the Horsemen, NWO. But next week we're going to do tag team, and then after that probably go into Nitro. Other than thunderstorms, Maestro, what else you got this week? Where are you going to be seen? Where are you going to be?
Well, this Saturday, I'll be in Union, South Carolina, the Union County Fairgrounds, defending the Trans-South Wrestling Heavyweight Championship. The Trans-South Wrestling bell time for that is 7:30. You know, I'm also coming up this month. I'm shooting a new trailer for an upcoming film I'm going to be in called Dracula's War, in which I'm playing the role of Jacob helping fight Dracula and the vampire army. So be looking out for that. And for all information on what's happening with me, just go to my official website at www.thestro.com. And you can find me on Google. Just put STRO Stro in search.
Show.com, everybody. I'm on the site right now. Go to the site to follow all your news on the show. You can follow me at DanLaw83 on Twitter or go to HICTalkRadio.com every Wednesday night, our MMA and wrestling show. Wednesday nights at 9, just go to HICTalkRadio.com. There's no other portals you got to go to. Listen to the show live right on that site. If you're a hockey fan, Monday nights, we do Obey the Puck at 9 o'clock as well. That's it. Shro, tag teams next week. Sir, thank you very much for joining me. We will see you next week. Have a good night, everyone.
All systems operating within normal design parameters. Engage cybernetic generation sequence. Malfunction detected. System overload. Warning.